Women like that will never, ever give you a chance.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Edition. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 16, The Whole Truth. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarity Budding.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Shall we talk Melrose?
Sure. Okay. Let's start with the plot that might have been interesting that they just glossed over.
Yeah, they really did. They really did. It is, in fact, our C-plot. Matt's legal battle anticlimactically concludes. Spoiler. We start out in the offices of Judith Hogue Esquire, where Matt is expositing that the halfway house offered him his job back. He thinks that means that he and Judith won, but she says they haven't if that's all he's being offered, because they're not acknowledging the reason he was fired or proposing a monetary settlement, and they will only do what she and Matt force them to. But he gets emotional as he says he misses the halfway house and the burger stand's getting old, and the lawyer, whose name is actually Sarah, rudely for our Sarah, tells Matt it's his decision, but that they wouldn't have offered him his job back if they hadn't made a strong case for wrongful dismissal, and so he agrees and decides to reject the offer. But then he's at the burger stand the next day and delivers and slightly spills an order on a tiny baby Jeremy Davies.
He is such a baby, like almost unrecognizable. You just have to sort of like color form some patchy facial hair onto him so that you can recognize him. And then you're like, oh yeah, that's definitely him.
And make his hair a little more scraggly, because
yes.
But he turns out to be one of Matt's former halfway house clients, and his name is Pete. He's just been promoted at the store where he works from stock to sales. He is done hustling and doing crack and has fond memories of his time at the halfway house and the stuff that Matt helped him through. And of course, therefore wonders why Matt is serving burgers at this place. And Matt shrugs off the question and tells Pete to continue having a good life. But this affects him. And the next day he goes raging into Sarah's office, where she tells him that the halfway house just upped their offer to $10K plus his job back if they settle out of court. He's thrilled. Sarah thinks they could win 10 times that much in court, but running into Pete reminded him why he does this work, and he can't help kids spending the next year in court. She at first shades him for giving up, but he refuses to let her bait him and insists that he's taking the offer, and so she relents. He's ecstatic. And the next day, Rhonda's just as happy for him after he finishes telling her about the cash settlement. She tells him about a mutual fund he can invest in, but he's not going to do that, nor buy land or a car. He is starting a legal aid fund for LGBTQ victims of workplace discrimination. By the way, no talk here of how, like, this is probably an underfunded facility that he's very excited to go back and work. Like, they don't have $10,000, but fine, whatever. I guess that's great.
Yeah, yeah. He needs to spend part of that money on a shirt that doesn't have its own post office.
Mm-hmm.
And a haircut.
And a haircut.
Fact, splurge. Get them all cut. Oh, my God. His shirt. He's not the only one in this episode. Oh, my God. Everyone is just David Silvering around. Like, it's bad. It is bad.
Yeah. You can see these in the visual aids, of course. Yeah, but that's it. Like, this is, as you said, this could have gone somewhere and then it went nowhere. Like,
yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm like annoyed by that or relieved,
right,
that they seem to realize, because I think the show is now sort of trying to rearrange itself to become the show that we understood it to be,
right?
So some of the other so-called plot lines in this episode are like a waste, but they're much more like they're setting things up. So
Yeah, what struck me about this one, and we'll see this more in the B plot, is that how much this seems to be the writers, some of whom probably at least, you know, were influenced by 90210, if not came over from there, that how much interest there is in, like, let's do plot lines about work, because that's something that doesn't come up on 90210, really.
Yeah.
So on to that B plot. Jane's career woes delay her plans to get pregnant again, question mark. This was a thing?
Yeah. In the 70s, we'll get to it.
Yeah. So Matt and Jane are fucking, but not in such a way where she doesn't feel like she should wait to answer the phone. And he also has no reaction to her doing so. Like, they just stop kissing and she reaches over to get the phone. And then he, like, grabs a glass of water. It's very strange and not sexy. Way to keep it hot, guys.
Yeah.
But it is Jane's boss who has just sold the store. So Jane is suddenly out of a job. And in keeping with the general lack of passion in the room, she does not seem that bothered about it. And goes into the store the next day to pick up what's left of her personal effects as the new owner is there barking orders and shitting on the stock. And she recognizes this woman as Kay Beacon and works it in clip two.
What is this, the ritual last look?
Oh, no, I'm just getting some of my personal things. A coffee cup, makeup bank, and my design book. I design all my own dresses.
I love it.
I love your designs. The new front slit skirt is fabulous.
Those gathers, the drop front. That was spring 90. God, that V-neck. Everybody had it before the season was over.
Wait a minute. I designed this dress.
Don't be embarrassed. I see my old things everywhere. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
This is not a Kay Beacon knockoff.
You're right. It's a knockoff of a knockoff. But what the heck? At least you used all my ideas in a smart way.
I'll be out of your way in a second.
The real question is, could you do better using my new ideas under my supervision?
Seriously?
Be at my studio tomorrow at 9. We'll talk.
Oh, boy. I mean, oh, first of all,
Darren Star Productions' ideas of what fashion designs, design houses are or want. Mm-hmm. Donna.
Yeah. They both look terrible. You can see, because I made a gif of Kay, that her dress, like, is at minimum three sizes too big for her in the bodice. Like, it gaps in the front and the back, which is remarkable. Like, if your character is supposed to be this fashion queen, like, get that shit fitted. It's not hard. Like, it's a totally boring, you know, sleeveless shift dress. They're, get another one.
But, or just borrow Allison and Joe's belt. Cinch it. That's what they're for. Anyway. Right.
Yeah. Jane's dress that she's so proud of is also very bad. Obviously, both of these are in the visual aids.
Yes. Oof.
And at home that night, Jane and Michael toast to Jane's new career as a junior design associate. But at work the next day, she fails to inspect incoming stock to Kay's exacting standards and gets lectured about raising her game. And then tells Jane to go look at the old stock and take anything that fits her. But first, Jane needs a refresher lesson on how to do this. So it's like kisses and bites. I don't know. She's hot and cold, this lady. Got it. And at home that night, Jane complains to Michael about how hard it is to get a read on Kay. And he basically just states that he's done hearing about her. And Jane apologizes, because that's what women do, and agrees to change the subject. So he comes around behind her to massage her neck, and they start making out, and she stops to go get Sarah.
Her diaphragm. So Jade Mancini and Buncey, the only people outside of an Erica Jong novel who use diaphragms.
Yeah. She does this with the bathroom door wide open, so Michael can come up behind her and demand to know what she's doing. Like, has no secret, nothing secretive about it. And he starts yelling at her that he thought they agreed about getting pregnant again, which, like, her miscarriage was, I feel like, you know, at most 6 episodes ago. Like, take it easy.
Yeah.
And
also,
you know,
I mean, really, like, you were just super condescending to her about her cute little job problems. And
I mean,
whatever.
You're lucky she wants to have sex with you at all, frankly, but
really.
She knows they agreed to keep trying, but wants to know if they have to tonight. And Michael takes it well, JK, clip 3.
I don't believe this. So it's like you fall into this new job and suddenly having a baby isn't important anymore.
Honey, I have doubts whether I want to have a child now. Or anytime soon.
I'm going to bed.
Ugh. Fuck off.
Yeah, bring some moisturizer, because you're done.
Honestly, like, it wasn't so long ago that we don't remember how he went off on her for getting pregnant. And now he's mad at her for not getting pregnant. Like, fuck.
Yeah. And there was a bunch of comedy involving his breaking a baby doll. Like, can we? Ugh. But I mean, again, this does seem like the show rearranging itself into a new mode, possibly. Indeed. So
Jane is then checking her teeth for lipstick in the toaster some amount of time later when Michael comes out and exposits that she didn't get home until late the night before, and she's still conflicted about Kay's management style, but can't deny her talent. And so she wants Kay to know that she's also talented, and Michael, who has never met Kay yet, has already called her a bitch in this scene, has opinions in clip 4.
That's not going to happen, Jane. Not with her breed. She would rather donate a vital organ while she's still alive than admit that. And I don't want to see you hurt.
Oh, sweetheart. I can take care of myself.
No, you don't need this woman to tell you what you already know.
I know. Look, tomorrow's Sunday. We will just spend the whole day together talking things out. And then we'll finish up what we started 2 nights ago.
I love you, Jane.
I love you, too. But right now, I gotta run.
Oh, of course. Kay's waiting. The fashion business sucks.
It's a lot like medicine.
I mean, great point. Like, his schedule is also completely inflexible, and he's always using it as an excuse for, you know, various ways he's disappointed her. Like, his lack of ability to connect things is, I mean, not remarkable. It's just a drag.
Yeah. Also, the baby voice. Really?
I know.
You don't need her to tell you what you already know. You're a great Janie Wayne. Fuck off. Like, she is a bit of a simp, but really.
Yeah.
Leave it to the professionals, please.
I know. Yeah, they're trying to make me fall out of love with him, and it is working. So at work, Kay goes raging through the studio, ending with Jane, whom she invites to critique the new collection. And Sarah, do you want to describe the look that they're talking about? Because you had feelings about it for the visual aids.
I did. And the feelings were positive. Keeping in mind, I'm like really tired right now. Sure. So I am not saying that these feelings are facts, but it was like a tone on tone, like pattern on pattern, like houndstooth over other pattern thing that I did not hate.
Yeah, it really feels like something that's come around again. It's like quasi Harlequin, but like stripy post Beetlejuice.
Yeah,
I didn't hate it either. But
I mean, compared to some of the schmattas that they have Jane, especially Jane, wearing, like, how do they find these like colors that don't even exist? Like, they are no color.
Yeah. That plus her hair, it's like, this is not a stylish person. But anyway, Jane starts suggesting tweaks on the look that she's altering, and it doesn't go well in clip 5.
The jacket buttons, they should be bigger, and the skirt needs a belt.
That's it. Well, bigger buttons are heavier. When the jacket's worn open, they'll cause a sag. The result, an unhappy, sloppy-looking customer.
Sorry.
Maybe you were absent the day they covered buttons at the Institut du Chic.
You know, Kay, if becoming a successful designer means turning into a rude, egomaniacal bitch like yourself, I must be in the wrong business.
May I see you in my office, please? You're right. I am thoughtless and insensitive, and I can be a bitch. But I think you're talented, and I'd hate to see you leave. If you could get through the first week, you can probably last 2. Who knows? Maybe a month.
You just fire her. There are lots of other people that are going to, you know, respect the position that you've put her in, because Jane does think that she's too good for this.
Yeah. Also, she's not talented. So find someone who is. It's Los Angeles. Yeah. They're there.
So that's when Michael rolls in with a picnic basket for lunch, and Kay yells for someone to sign for the food, and Jane breaks in to introduce them. And they go up on the roof to eat lunch, which is when we see that this huge studio is right next to the ocean. Like, no, it's not, but okay. And Michael admits Jane was right. He should not have attacked her for wanting to focus on her new job right now. So what happens next? Clip 6.
We both want a baby, Michael. I'm just asking to delay it. See, I have a basic career question to answer. And this is the perfect time and place to do it. But we are partners. So I have to ask if that's okay with you.
No, you really don't, because it's your body.
Yep.
Like, discuss it with him, sure. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to ask his permission to stay on your birth control. That is horseshit.
Yeah.
Also, didn't you support him through med school?
Yeah.
Like, if anyone gets a vote, it's not Michael. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we agree. So let's leave this where it is for now. Hope that they don't get pregnant. JK, we know they don't. And move on to our A plot. Joe's secret revealed amid and around Billy's drugged up dreams about Allison. So Billy comes into the kitchen in an Aloha shirt and blazer, which apparently qualifies as making an effort for him with his appearance. When he says he's going to Shooters, Allison tries to invite herself along, but he lets it be known he's going there to try to pick up women, and she backs off, but then goes running after him after getting a whiff of whatever the early 90s version of Axe body spray is. But then he retrieves a bottle of champagne and two glasses from the flower bed that's right outside their door and takes all of that up to bother Joe with them. She is in a robe, not interested, particularly not in his scent, and says she was planning on doing nothing, and he suggests they do nothing together. And she's like, bye. So then he actually goes to Shooters to pout about this rejection to Jake, who also thinks his do nothing together line is lame, and say he's giving up on Joe. Also, he has a toothache. Jake thinks that Joe's reaction was due to Billy's cologne, probable. And the next day, Billy wakes up in pain from his tooth and goes to the aspirin, and Allison has no empathy because she thinks he's hungover or sour about Joe, but then tells him to go to her dentist. And I guess all the times we saw Jake working on his bike in the courtyard were laying the groundwork for this moment. Sarah, please describe.
Yeah, he comes out, his bike naturally parked by the pool. Where else? It's like the Bellage of this show for his bike. So she is like lying awkwardly taking ground up shots.
Yeah.
Of his machine.
Uh-huh.
And then we hear clip 7.
I charge $2 a shot.
If you're gonna charge for it, then like put it out on the street where someone else might be able to see it. Is that to pay for the extra pool cleaning and extra hosing off that has to be done? Really, move your fucking bike, do it now.
Yeah. As flirt lines go, it's not the best, but, you know, on the other hand, he probably doesn't have to try that hard.
No.
She is hot for this bike, and he flirts back that it's even better at 60 miles an hour. She says that she was counting on doing nothing again, and he steals Billy's doing nothing together line, and she smirks because she knows why. And then they go for a ride, and I have to say, I've no desire to ride anywhere on a motorcycle, but I feel like this is the first time I've ever seen the guy who's trying to impress a woman with it by having her steer and be behind her. And I mean, it's hotter than the usual. Like, maybe I get it.
Yeah. That could also just be the grand showiness of it all.
True.
Yeah.
True. Anyway, she's having the time of her life. He can tell she's experienced on bikes. At first, she jokes that she learned to ride in prison, which, like, I get that you want to make a prison joke, but like that doesn't make sense. There are not motorcycles in prison.
Yeah. You know, motorcycle prison. What? Uh-huh.
So they've driven out to some desolate canyon. He likes to be alone and wonders if there's something wrong with that. She doesn't think so because she's the same way. She was alone a lot as a kid because her mother wasn't around much. They both like freedom of solitude. He wants to keep going, but she has to get back for a job interview. So he drops her off, but not at a job interview. She goes into to see a jeweler, handing over a bracelet that she wants to sell.
Were you also afraid that this was going to be Jason Priestley, Jerk and Drag?
It occurred to me.
It was, I mean, it was like in the wrong timeline. That was like years later, but.
Yes. Also, this is definitely not Beverly Hills. Like, when we see it from the outside, it's kind of a grubby part of town, wherever they are. But she says the bracelet was $12,000 4 years ago, so she's pissed to hear that its current market value is only $7,000. Like, a bracelet loses half its value as soon as you drive it off the lot. Everyone knows that. Just kidding.
Well, but also, it's engraved. Come on.
Right. Right, that's true. So she's desperate enough that she'll take whatever he's offering. And so he wants her ID to cut the check, and she lies that she left her wallet in the car, but we'll come back to show him on her way back from the bank. And he's like, no. He offers to put it in his safe until she comes back, but she declines. And then she goes outside to see that Jake is there stalking her. She is not happy about that, or that he's asking nosy questions about her photography job, since it's none of his business. And he decides to drop it and take her home, but she declines. So then we cut to Allison and Joe in Joe's bathroom.
Which is huge.
Which is huge. Eating pizza. They're getting ready to paint the room. That does not make it okay. Don't eat in a bathroom. So disgusting.
Well, like, and then the pizza. What were the toppings again?
Pineapple was one of them.
And then it was like goat cheese and roasted peppers that I was like,
yeah.
I mean, if you're one of those pineapple on pizza people, first of all, I've called the police. But second of all, like, those would go pretty well together. But, and on top of everything else, like, they're eating pizza in a bathroom. The toppings sound vile, and they are visibly not what's on the pizza.
Right. The other thing is they're painting this room black, even though we heard in the previous episode that that was what her second bedroom was supposed to be for, that that's what she was going to use as a dark room. So I don't get it. Maybe she's just goth, either. Whatever. Allison wants to know about Joe's mysterious ex-husband. So here's the story. Clip 8.
I was in New York in college and I was doing a project at the Met, and that's how I met him. Now will you take the light out of my eyes and put the rubber hose away, please?
All right. Next topic. Is the job hunt too personal?
Complete washout.
Glamour jobs are always hard to find. Wish I had a talent like photography.
I had a great teacher. My mother. We used to go out on Sundays and prowl around and look for really great shots. God, she had a great eye. We were really close.
She's still back east?
Yeah.
You know, the more I think about it, the more surprised I am that Michael talked the landlord into letting you do this.
Did I tell you that I slept with him?
Gullible.
Oh, Joe.
Look. May the Lord smile upon Daphne Zuniga and all of her endeavors, but she is not nearly a good enough actor in this episode in particular to sell this, like, so-called character beat of her putting people on. Because some of her line readings, and in a certain scene in her defense, which we're about to hear, like, it's possibly because they're shooting outside.
Right.
And she's like having to yell over the bike or whatever. But there are a number of other exemplars where it's like, I don't think that this is the way you want to go with this character, with this particular thespian at the handlebars. But okay.
Yeah. Agree. So downstairs, Michael bitches about the mess that Joe is making and that she's painting the room black, and then sees a locksmith on her way out. And Michael then gets snitty that she's changing the locks, announcing that he will need a duplicate key, and she tries to fight him about that, and then he kind of threatens, you know, if she doesn't give him one, it's that or else she'll have to move, and she relents and says he will have one, and I guess hopes that he doesn't follow up on it because he's distracted, which, you know what, he may not. Fair enough. And later, Jake comes to see the progress that she has made and gossip about Michael, and she changes the subject to asking him to sell the bracelet because she doesn't have a photo ID. And Jake is shocked to know she doesn't have a driver's license, though she says no one drives in New York. But, like, we're also supposed to think her husband was loaded, but she doesn't have a passport. Like, wouldn't that do? But I don't know. Fine. I guess she's going by a different name. That's part of it, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, you just get a license. It's not a driver's license.
Right.
You just get one. You get an ID that proves that you're old enough.
Yeah. Point is, Joe is totally broke and needs the bracelet money. So Jake goes to a pawn shop. The counter guy's only offering $4,500, but agrees to make a deal at $7,000. Jake hands over his ID, and then the pawn shop guy wants to know who Beth is, since the name is engraved on the back. And instead of just saying it's his mother or something, Jake, the streetwise operator, says he doesn't know and is selling the bracelet for a friend. So, of course, the guy is like, no, since it could be stolen. He doesn't want trouble. So Jake goes storming out to where Joe is waiting on, like, the lawn next to the ocean where he has parked his bike, and furiously demands to know who Beth is, and this ensues. Clip 9.
You didn't sell it. Jake, I told you I needed the money.
I hate being used. Worse, I hate being lied to.
What does that mean?
Is it stolen?
Thank you. Thank you for the vote of confidence. Yeah, I knew I could depend on you.
You're not answering my question.
Why should I if you're not going to believe the answer?
Try me.
I am just so sick of you people and all your questions. Why don't you just mind your own business?
Fine.
Gotta know everything, all the time. You ask for a simple favor and you just...
Oh my God, someone call cut. Anyone. Still going on. I mean, in Daphne Zuniga's defense, this, like, I think they gave her a certain number of, like, ranty things to say. She ran out of them and trailed off in a way that was very awkward. Mm-hmm. And then she is left to stand there literally pouting and stamping her foot like a fucking 3-year-old for a week and a half.
Yeah.
Y'all,
they were really proud of that crane shot or whatever, dolly shot, I guess.
And it's inappropriate, sexy guitar. And if you're running short, maybe, I don't know, give Matt another scene in which he's at the barber. Fuck. Anyway,
yeah, it's not bad. Just pouting. It's that she's like trying to cry, but there's clearly no tears. So we have to watch her dry cry into the act out. It's awkward and bad.
Yeah. And it takes a long time.
Yeah. You can see in the visual aids because, of course, I made a GIF. So then Jake ends up at Shooters bitching about Joe to Billy and telling him to stay away from her like Jake himself plans to, and denying that she got under his skin. But then he's awakened by cops at his door the next day. They are trying to corroborate Joe's story that he loaned her his motorcycle. And at first he denies he's ever seen her, but then relents and claims he did lend her the bike, which means he gets a ticket because she doesn't have a license. He lets her in and she reveals that she took his spare house key from under the plant outside to come in and get his bike key. Overly complicated. She tries to win him back over by saying how right he was about using the wind to clear her head. He's still pissed, so she admits she handled the bracelet thing badly, but swears that it's hers. She's going to deal with Michael. She needs friends and thinks Jake does too. To prove she means it, she volunteers to split the ticket with him. Like, if he knows you're going to sell this bracelet, he knows you're about to have $7,000. Pay the whole ticket. It's your fault. Whatever.
Yeah. Also, you functionally stole the bike.
Yeah. Anyway, he is appalled, telling her she owes him big time. For starters, she's taking him out for dinner that night.
Oh, and he says it, you owe me big time, lady. Like, okay, Noah, thank you. What was that line reading from?
Oh. Yeah. And then there's like flirty banter about him dipping his donut in his coffee. It's weird. Again, if you're short, just cut Matt's hair. Show it from every angle. It needs to happen.
Yeah, it does.
So Allison comes home from work to find Billy high as shit on the couch after his dental appointment. He's also very demanding. She suggests that he go recuperate at his parents' house. He accuses her of being insufficiently compassionate, and she cracks that she'll go put on her nurse's uniform. Elsewhere, Joe has directed Jake to some secret dance venue after their dinner so she can take photos for her portfolio. She tries to hide her camera in his jacket, and in the scuffle, they get kind of handsy with each other, Joe flirting about his belief that every woman he meets has to fall all over him. He claims to see Madonna getting out of a limo, and then some rando rolls up on Joe, and clip 10.
Beth, when did you hit L.A.?
Wrong lady. Wrong lady, pal. Come on.
Wait, it's me, Jeremy.
I said wrong lady, all right?
Beth, come on, what are you doing?
Hey, come on. Look, the lady said she doesn't know you, okay? Back off.
Sorry.
Joe?
Joe's gone. Whoops. She's trouble. Back to the couch, where Billy is calling for Allison in his sleep and then dreaming that she appears in much prettier nightwear than we've ever seen her in, but also Sarah.
A scrunchie.
A sexy velvet scrunchie.
Like, that this is what she has on in Billy's wet dream says something? Something bad? I'm not even sure. I think it just says that it was 1993 or whatever, but oh my God. Oof.
Yeah.
Grim.
So, of course, she's there to kiss him better, and then we see the reality is he's hugging a pillow and repeating her name in his sleep while she listens, amused, behind him, and then tries to shake him awake. He claims to have had a disturbing dream, and she tells him not to take so many pills, and then he fully checks to see if he has a boner, which I also kept. Apparently, he doesn't.
Yeah,
upstairs, I mean, Jake is knocking on Joe's door and asking where she disappeared to, and she tensely says she doesn't like fights. Obviously, he wants to know who Beth is, and she lies that it was dark and the guy was just mistaken. He doesn't care what the truth is. He just wants to hear it. She disputes that she owes it to him.
He's also barged in and is, like, looming over him.
Is that in this scene? No, that's the next one.
Oh, okay. Still, sorry. Continue.
Well, that's the end of the scene. Then she says there's nothing simple about her life right now and slams the door. Drama. So Billy gets up the next day feeling better. Clip 11.
I feel like my brain's been cryogenically frozen for 50 years. Just beginning to thaw.
Oh, buddy. Your brain, it is not thawing ever.
No. Yeah.
So Allison starts needling him about his obvious sex dream the night before. He claims not to remember, but then changes his mind to say they were alone in the apartment when a T-Rex popped its head through the window and snatched her up in its jaw. And she asks what he was holding on to then, and he says the dinosaur's tail to try and get it to drop her. Then has to change the subject sort of by asking if she dreams about him, and she flirts that she does, but nothing she can talk about. Oh, God.
Ugh.
So then Joe is developing photos in her dark room when she hears a knock. It's Jake, who comes into the apartment very aggressively and does not notice her stepping back to make space between them as he announces he's not the kind of guy she needs to run away from. Considering how bad an actor she is generally, this is pretty good space work, I thought.
Yeah. And it seems like the episode director, like, tried to emphasize that, but then didn't understand that perhaps they should, like, shift the scene so that he's not pitched forward at the waist like Brandon used to do to Kelly all the time. Like,
yeah,
are you gonna hit her?
Right.
Then step, like, back, mm-hmm. Open body language, chill out.
Yeah.
It's bad. Not a good look.
No, it's not. But I mean, I felt like her reaction was intentional.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
whatever.
I do.
We'll get to it. He doesn't care about her bracelet or her door locks. He just cares about her. She wants to know why, since she hasn't given him any reason to. He thinks that she's desperate for someone to care about her and promises he's not going to hurt her, wants her to trust him. And she sighs, says her whole life has been a series of escapes because her mother died by suicide when Joe was 7. Her father remarried right away, and she met her husband in college. He's a handsome scion of old money. And she imagined herself a Cinderella whose prince had finally come, but he thought her photography was a silly hobby and she was trying to be a socialite for him, but then saw herself fade away and she knew she had to get out. She left without a note or a goodbye, and this guy doesn't know where she is. And Beth is Joe, because her full name is Joe Beth. Her mother called her Joe, and after she died, Joe didn't want anyone else to call her that. And she's sorry for all the lies, but sometimes she doesn't know when to stop running. Jake says they are alike, and then he pecks her, and then they kiss for real, and it's kind of adorable. Like, I hate that I like them, but when they pull apart, they look at each other and they smile in pure delight, which is such a nice change and wholesome looks from a couple, as opposed to, like, when they look like they kissing each other causes them physical pain. I mean, maybe I'm just, like, worn down from the end of 90210 and all the Dylan Kelly baloney, but this is cute. I like them for each other. Sorry.
Yeah, no, me too. And they get back together, I think, like 10 million times over the course of the series, and it's always it's always satisfying. They have pretty good chemistry, even though she is maybe not the strongest actor. I do not care for her apologizing for not telling a virtual stranger her whole life story.
Totally.
Like, some of that shit was really dark, and if you don't want to share it, you don't have to.
No, totally. I agree. But that's where we leave it for today. Let us name our episode MVP.
Jeremy Davies?
Sure. I'm going to say the second jewelry hawk guy who had the sense to tell Jake to get lost. Also, tip him off about the engraving that Jake did not notice.
Yeah, fair enough.
Least valuable player. Michael.
Yep.
Would be an impregnator of women, non-respecter of careers. Michael
Mancini. Terrible of hair. It's bad. It's
baby
like a
voice
ball.
Speaker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. We agree.
Yeah. Next time, for the very last time, on Again With This Beverly Hills 90210 edition, it all comes to an end. And in typical Bev Niner fashion, it takes its sweet goddamn time about it while not mentioning Brenda Walsh at all. You can mention Brenda all you want when you're checking out our visual aids for that episode and the entire series run. You guys, we did it! On our website at againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can support our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra episodes, and where we will be continuing to generate content from and about The Zip. And don't forget, we are writing a book on the show that is still not a bit that we're doing. I am Dramatical Diaphragm Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Ritual Last Look, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Pawn Shop Kerfuffle, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Ding, 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 ding.